paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Most people know John Taffer as a larger-than-life personality with a no-holds-barred approach to turning around hotels, restaurants, bars, and struggling businesses. He's also a New York Times best-selling author and the creator, executive producer, and star of Paramount Network's hit series, Bar Rescue. The show kicks off its 10th season this Sunday, February 22nd, with two back-to-back episodes streaming on Paramount Plus at 9 p.m. Central. And John joins us once again on the program. John, how are you, my friend?
Good to be back, Dave.
You know what I was going to say? When we last spoke, you were in Chicago for the restaurant show, and I had a chance to interview you at McCormick Place. And I want people to know, despite your tough approach, pushing bar owners to recognize they're failing and still have a future. Off camera, you're truly one of the nicest guys on the planet.
Thanks. You know, Dave, if I gave you a 60-day project and gave you 4 days to do it, you'd be a raving maniac too.
That's true. So I want to start with this. The late comedian Don Rickles used to talk about many places he played at or frequented over his career. And one of them, I remember talking to Johnny Carson about it, was Barney's Beanery. And that's where you first worked as a bartender, I think.
I did. I was a bartender at Barney's Beanery and a manager at the Troubadour, which was about three blocks down the street. Yep.
Yeah, that was a Troubadour. Rolling Stones named it one of the best rock clubs in the world. So, I mean, you were surrounded by Linda Ronstadt, Jackson Browne, Elton John, David Lee Roth.
All of them. Yep, all of them. And a funny thing, Barney's Beanery, Janis Joplin died in Barney's Beanery.
No way. Oh, that I didn't know. Wow. Yep. Wow. What gave you your drive? I mean, from a business perspective, because I'm going to say you're a musician too. Music and business may seem like two different worlds, but, one driven by passion, the other by precision. But most successful people understand they're very connected, rhythm, timing, awareness, branding, reinvention, the same instincts that make great music resonate are the very qualities that build lasting businesses.
Oh, boy. You know, nobody's ever given me that analogy quite that way before, but that's right on the money. Yeah. I was a drummer. There's times you go to the front of the song, there's times you fall in the back of the song, right? You play in a strategic sense as a drummer. You have to have the discipline to do your rudiments and your exercises, just like you need to learn in business. You better have your timing. There's the right time to say something and a wrong time to say something.
Right.
But that energy and pace and all of these things, I think, is a great analogy.
And it's something that I think, just based on seeing interviews you've done before and just seeing you on Bar Rescue, like, I think you've lived your entire life that way. Like, you figured it out very early on.
Yeah, I think I had aggressive parents. My mother was very aggressive, and my grandfather was extremely aggressive. And in the number of marketing books, my grandfather gets credit for inventing direct mail.
Right. Yeah.
So I have a rich history of a pretty aggressive parents and grandparents. So I guess they inspired me to be this way.
Yeah, as I say, even the marketing side of it, you talk about your grandfather, that's really important in all of this as well, because not only are you selling the business to other people and to visitors and guests and so forth, but honestly, you've had to sell yourself your entire life.
I have. And, I was a consultant for, of course, my entire career before I was on television. And, in that world, you live contract to contract. So your last project better be good or there's not a next contract.
Right.
So the pressure on each project that you have when you live contract to contract and deal to deal is obviously, it's a pressure cooker. But when you do that for 40 years, you get really good at it, Dave.
I bet you do. But you went from West Hollywood, think about the clubs and the Beanery and so forth. You went from West Hollywood, and then you went to the Catskills. Talk about that transition a little bit.
Well, talk about culture shock. I go from the Troubadour, Dead Kennedys and everything, to Grossinger's, a kosher resort in the Catskill Mountains, which, by the way, Vegas wasn't the size that it is now, so it was, I believe, the second largest hotel in America. And one of the largest in the world at the time, 1,200 acres, three 9-hole golf courses, toboggan runs, our own airport, 3,600 wow. seats in our dining room. It was a massive operation. Back then, we did over $1 million a month in food and beverage,
wow.
which is, you know, massive dollars, with convention centers and playrooms and nightclubs and all the Jackie Mason and all right. those old entertainers.
I'm just going to say that. Yeah. I'm just going to say yeah. that because the Catskills, you know, I mean, even if you've never been there, you heard it from these old comedians like, hey, you know, I'm going to go play the Catskills. That yeah. was the place to be, right?
Oh, yeah. We used to do singles weekends with the Pointer Sisters and all that kind of stuff. It was a great time. You know, that's what exposed me to the hotel industry.
Yeah.
And then from there, I started, you know, managing hotels and became vice president of a hotel company. So actually, when I started television, I had my own consulting company. But my last job before I had my own company was vice president of a hotel company.
Yeah, I was going to say 80s, 90s, 2000s. Yeah. I mean, yeah, talk a little bit about 86. That journey. Yeah, 86. Okay.
Yeah, 86, in the mid-80s, tax codes changed.
Mm-hmm.
And hotels used to have certain write-offs. So restaurants didn't need to be profitable. Bars didn't need to be profitable. There was a tax situation where they derived their income from rooms. Those codes changed, and suddenly these hotel companies that never really made money in food and beverage before, the Holiday Inns of the world, if you will, suddenly now they got to make money. So I created a consulting company right at that time, and we did hundreds and hundreds of hotel food and beverage operations. All over the world.
And then you turned this into a vocation. But I'll, before we jump to the show, Taffer's Tavern, you opened in 2020, pandemic. And by the way, I have friends that did the same thing because it was the timing. They planned on opening in 2020 and then boom, you get sidelined. But what they have told me is it made them better at navigating, you know, that kind of time in our lives. It made them better business owners today.
Yeah, you know, we had to be very nimble in those days. And we were building Taffer's Tavern. The first one was Alpharetta, Georgia. And when anybody got sick, we had to shut down production for 3 weeks. So construction, I should say, for 3 weeks. So it took us almost 2 years to build the darn restaurant and cost us about 30-40% more than it should. So you start in a hole that you didn't expect to be in, Dave. So you better watch your dimes and manage that business even tighter to dig out of that hole. But I'm proud to say we just had our fifth anniversary, so we did.
Awesome. Very cool. And you say a bar is a bar, and Bar Rescue, obviously, but a tavern has soul. Explain that.
Well, you know, bars can be cold. So there's something about a tavern. When you walk into a tavern, and taverns are kin to pubs. And, you know, the second public building ever built in a bar, David, was a pub. The first was a church. And they had snugs, little walls in them, so the priest could sit in the next table to the town bum, and there would be a little wall between them, and everybody could coexist in them. You know, when you went into a tavern, you sat for a while. Friends were there. It was really a part of the community, very connective in every way. Taverns always had food. It was always comfort foods. You could get that turkey dinner. You could get that roast beef with the gravy. There was something that was warm and fuzzy about that tavern and connective that goes right back to the early days of America. So that's what I mean. It has a certain depth and connectivivity to it that just a bar doesn't have.
You know, it's funny you say that. I mean, I was, I was born in 67, so I remember watching with my grandfather Archie Bunker's place. And I'm like, yeah, he's working in a bar. Like, the whole show's at a bar now. He's like, it's not a bar, Dave. That's a tavern. And it told him something. That's where everybody hung out.
Yeah, but Archie didn't exactly provide the warmest of environments, though.
No, he didn't. Then comes Bar Rescue, and we'll talk about that with John Taffer. The new season of Bar Rescue on Paramount Plus premieres this Sunday, and there's more with John next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We're talking to John Taffer. The new season of Bar Rescue, Paramount Plus premieres this Sunday with back-to-back episodes at 9 Central. So, John, you worked with Paramount long before the show came about. You were doing marketing and licensing. Is that what led to pitching Bar Rescue 15 years ago?
Yes, I had worked with Paramount Consumer Products Division before that as a consultant, and I was a major licensee with TV Land, with one of their brands, and a bunch of their television. As a matter of fact, at one point, I was the largest non-studio right holder of television shows in the country, but I didn't have broadcast rights. I had three-dimensional rights. I could take an image from Lucy and put it in my restaurant.
Wow.
I could duplicate the chair from Frasier, put it in my restaurant.
Get
I could put Dick Van Dyke's living room in my restaurants. I had all those rights and worked with Viacom and Consumer Products back in those days. And that's what gave me the introduction to go talk to them about being on TV.
You know, you say that I'm right now in this phase of my life, I'm running the Museum of Broadcast Communications here in Chicago. And we just rebuilt the Tonight Show set with Johnny Carson. Ooh. And working with Jeff Satzing, who is Johnny's nephew, runs everything. But, you know, we become good friends over the years. And we decided, okay, it was Johnny's birthday, 100th birthday last year. Let's honor him, tell his story. And I think we've been open since October. I think we've had 4,000 pictures at Johnny's desk. And I love that you did that. I love that you did that for a living. So you have a kind of a passion for this old school stuff as well.
Of course. Tradition means a lot, boy. We don't want to throw that away.
Yeah.
Especially with a guy, an icon like Johnny.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So 15 years ago, 2011, you brought Bar Rescue to the airwaves. How long did it take? Because I watch older shows too. The concept hasn't changed all that much. I mean, you've stuck to it since day one on going and trying to help these people find their passion again. Because that's, I think, the biggest thing I see when you walk into any bar. They're depleted. There's no effort made anymore. Some of them are drinking themselves into more debt. Like you almost have to uplift them as a human being to even get them to point A.
Of course, man. Every failing business is a failing owner, Dave. You know, if I build them the most beautiful palace in the world, they'll still probably mess it up. So it's all about them. You know, people say, John, you see the dirt in the bar? I don't see the dirt in the bar. I see the guy who let the dirt be there. That's what I see.
Sure.
So I have to change them, and it's not easy, David. I mean, why are they failing? Is it lack of pride? Is it laziness? Are they drinkers? Do they resent their family? They're not trying to be successful? Are they scared of failure? I love this one. Guy's so scared of failure, he'll lose $40,000 a month, but he won't close the place. Because when he closes, that's when he failed.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's amazing the kinds of things that I deal with. I got to figure out what is it that's blocking their success, and then I have to attack that. And, you know, they have massive egos, many of them. They're not going to admit to me that they're wrong. They blame everything but themselves. So if I don't get them to admit that they're failing because of them, then I can't change them. And that's why the show gets ugly, because they resist that.
Well, the excuses. I will tell you, if I was ever doing anything in business with you, I would never give you an excuse for anything, because I know you're looking at them, you watch them, you're looking at them straight in the eye, and I know they're full of crap right off the bat. And so do you. Yep. Like, you just don't take it.
No, I can't. Because those excuses are exactly why they're failing. Excuses are never good. Excuses paralyze us. They stop forward growth. An excuse is always used at an inflection point of failure.
Well, and you say passion and opportunity is the key when you like what you do. And I agree with you on this 100%. If you do not like what you're doing, either you're going to fail or you're going to just trip through it and not have any pride in what you do. You really, really have to have that passion ingrained in your soul.
Yeah, and a bar business is a deep passion. I mean, what are you passionate about? If you're just passionate about, alcohol in the front of the house, well, you don't manage your numbers, you're going to fail. If you're, the kind of guy who's in the office all day long crunching numbers, you'll manage your costs well, but you won't have revenue.
Right.
So it's a very challenging business in that way, David, to find that balance, because every expense problem is solved with revenue, right?
The more
revenue I have, I don't have expense issues anymore. So that balance in an operator is very, very important, and many don't have that.
Well, and the big thing too that I've learned from watching the show is that people hide in the back room. They're not paying attention. They're not on the floor. They're not managing their people. They're not looking at the dollars going out the door free. You know, it's almost like they're making up for their failure by buying people free drinks, and they're just getting themselves further in the hole.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't believe that a bar or a restaurant is in the food and beverage business. I believe we're in a reaction business.
Yeah.
When the plate hits the table, Dave, one of two things happens. Either you sit up and you react to it, or you don't. Same thing with the drink. So that cook in the kitchen, that's not the product. That's the vehicle.
Right.
The product is how people react. So me as a restaurant operator, I sit in the front of the house. I want to see your facial expressions. Are your feet tapping when I play my music program? Is it correct?
Right.
What is the pace of service? Is it correct? What are your facial expressions when the plate hits the table, when you take your first bite? That's the way you manage a business. And your passion needs to be the customers. My passion is making these people happy. I want to make them smile with every bone in my body. And if that's my passion, then I'll change that plate 100 times until I achieve it.
Yeah, you do. You absolutely do. I know you've been asked this before, but what is the most challenging rescue you've had thus far? And what's your favorite?
Well, you know, my favorite are always the ones with the family dynamic, you know, where I really made a change. There was a bar we did in Memphis, a Havana bar. The father was a cigar guy, and the son had heart surgery at 2 years old and was given a 20% chance of surviving. So it affected the father and the son's relationship. He was overprotective. The son couldn't succeed. And I'll never forget, I went back to their house, and the son never knew the father felt that way, and the father never knew the son. And, you know, when I left, it was a completely different family. It felt so good when I left. There was another one called Characters, where the staff had to dress like Marilyn Monroe and then all these people. And the kids were crying every day, and the parents were screaming at them, and everybody was blaming each other for failure. Now they have four restaurants. Wow. It's called Moon Runners, and they're really successful. But my greatest one of all that meant so much to me, two brothers in their 50s, twins, haven't spoken in 9 years. And they own this bar, and they work in it the same night. So they're in the same building.
Not talking.
Doing this business, and they will not talk.
Remember this.
Man. Haven't had a holiday dinner together in 9 years. When I left, they were talking and counting money together. A couple months later, I get an email with a photograph of them having a Christmas dinner together as a family. Those are the things that mean so much to me. The one I hate probably the most of all, probably Headhunters in Austin, where my wife, Nicole, was sitting there in open-toed shoes, and the cockroaches were walking across her feet. And I had to shut production down for 5 days, David, to fumigate. It was a class 5 infestation. It was unbelievable. I look at the owner, and I pick up a bottle with a bug in it. And I say to him, "You have bugs in your liquor." And he looks at me, pauses, and then says, "You're a bug."
Oh,
I mean, how the heck do you deal with that?
Yeah, not easy. Not easy at all. All right, so what are we going to see in the new season? Where are you heading, John?
Well, you know, Dave, pandemic really weakened the industry, the past inflationary issues. So my industry has had a pretty tough run the past 6-8 years. So a lot of these people are in serious debt. You're going to see a lot of houses on the line, a lot of marriages on the line, a lot of relationships between parents and children on the line. This is a really emotional season, the most emotional I think we've ever had, and very challenging for me because of all the emotion. You're going to see me tear up once or twice this year.
The liquor side of things, you're seeing distilleries that are stopping production because they're so backlogged. What do you make of all that, John?
You know, the pendulum swings back and forth. I've seen this over the years, Dave, but there's a sociological change because of the pandemic. You know, Starbucks used to be the minor leagues for bars. Kids, they're college students, 18, 19, 20 years old, they go to Starbucks, they sit around the little table with beverages, and they sip and they socialize, and it's very much like a cocktail lounge type of environment. They didn't have that. So they're more comfortable with being at home in many cases than being out in that environment. But certainly their day-to-day traffic, the patterns of their life have a lot more time at home. Look at the home delivery services for restaurants, Dave. You think they would be doing this volume before the pandemic? So there's a massive lifestyle change. People are drinking at home. They're ordering restaurant food at home. I mean, people are eating lobster tails at home from restaurants, $100 steaks at home. So these are significant changes. I'm not sure that we're going to see, you know, the change, the socialization change back to these environments in this new generation for a number of years. But I believe the liquor pendulum will swing back and forth. It always does. And now, of course, with the new FDA ruling that a little alcohol isn't bad for you.
Right.
In small amounts, it's actually good for you. So I think that will swing back. But it's a very challenging time for sure, David. Distilleries are filing bankruptcy. They're closing. Some of them are halting production. And it's a challenging time.
But kids these days, and with their iPhones and their iPads and their social media, that's how they're communicating. They're not in front of one another. They're working remotely. And so the social, I agree with you 1,000%. There's a generation, a couple generations here that don't even know how to look somebody in the eye, shake their hand, and have a conversation.
Yes, they're almost awkward in that environment now, and that's really shameful. I mean, you and I grew up. I remember when I was 21, I couldn't wait to go to a bar.
Oh yeah,
I mean, we looked forward to that. It was exciting. It was almost an indoctrination into the social world.
It's very true. You know? It's very true.
I don't think that indoctrination quite exists like it used to.
It does not. It does not. Before I let you go, Taffer's Brown Butter Bourbon. I know it's only in Georgia, Massachusetts, Nevada. I'm a bourbon guy. Whiskey is complex. Tell us about yours.
Well, Speakeasy sells it in Illinois, I believe.
Oh,
you
really?
Take a look at Speakeasy. Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
But I was in my Alpharetta restaurant, and you know, I always have to come up with new drinks after 283 episodes. It's not so easy, Dave. So I'm walking through my kitchen, and my cook is making brown butter. And I said, let me have that. So I take the brown butter, and I pour it into a cooking bag. And then I fill it with whiskey, and I boil it for 4 hours. Wow. Take it, put it in the refrigerator. The butter coagulates to the top. I scoop it off, pour it through a coffee filter, and browned butter bourbon was born.
Wow.
I put it in a cocktail in my Taffer's Tavern in Alpharetta, Georgia, called The Campfire. And Dave was selling over 1,000 of these cocktails a month. It's unbelievable. People love this stuff. So I had to bottle it. So I did. We launched it about 2 years ago in Nevada, Massachusetts. We just rolled out in Georgia. Florida's next, and we believe Illinois will be after that. So hopefully we'll see you there soon.
Love hearing that. John Taffer, the new season of Bar Rescue on Paramount Plus premieres this Sunday with back-to-back episodes at 9 Central. John, can't wait to see the new season. Always thanks for your time, my friend.
My pleasure, Dave. Be well.